Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
Coming up on Gamers Week podcast.
So Fatal Frame isn't good enough for you?
They've covered Fatal Frame in directs before.
Have they?
Yeah.
Man, this is the first time I'm hearing of it. And you say you like horror games.
I do like horror games. I've talked about Fatal Frame before when we discussed, I think in February when we discussed that direct.
I'm just sitting back here going, I'm some popcorn.
I was like, what is that noise? Was not clear at the beginning that that was a popcorn noise. I don't sound any better than I did on Monday, unfortunately.
No, you do not.
That's a bummer.
You sound the same.
Yep.
Maybe this is like a permanent thing.
Don't joke about that. I may as well take up smoking then if this is how I'm going to sound forever.
I'm going to call you Beatrice because Beatrice sounds like a lady smoking name. Like, hey, this is Beatrice. Oh, yes.
Can you hand me my pack of Virginia Slims over there?
Be a boy. They're the hundreds, the big ones.
I only drink the hundreds. Smoke. What did I say?
Drink. It's drink. Okay.
I mean, if her voice sounds like that, she might be drinking it. We don't know.
I'm pouring the rest of my beer in my glass, so that's probably why I said drink.
All right, let's kick this off. Welcome to Gamers Week Podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. Today is episode 39, Wednesday, September 14th, 2022. My name is Ryan, a.k.a. Retro Game Brews, a.k.a. Fruitcake, a.k.a. Professor Rye Bread. I have many names, and they're all stupid. But I also have with me two fantastic hosts. First off is a man whose magic shows allow him to play the tuggiest of wars, Donnie G Retro. Donnie, what? How you doing?
Mama used to say, Mama said they'd take me anywhere. Of course, Mama used to beat me with a rubber hose. Never mind. I got to finish that. I'm doing well, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing great. And we also have with us, she's back from the bubonic plague, but she's a woman who is currently trying out to be Macy Gray's understudy, Blue Williams. Blue, how you doing?
Good. Who's Macy Gray?
I try to say goodbye and I choke. Try to walk away and I step off.
That sounded more like the old guy from Family Guy.
You're a new paper boy.
I'm sure it was a very funny intro. I'm just, excuse me while I Google Macy Gray.
Oh, wow.
Take your time.
Okay.
But how are you doing, Blue, while you Google Macy Gray?
You know, I don't sound like it, but I feel so much better. So I'm so happy to be back. I missed you guys. I missed doing this. This is going to be a fun night.
If we missed you too.
If the listeners can stand to listen to me like this for the next hour.
And I'm so glad you're back because you're editing again. Yay.
Right. That's the real reason you missed me is because you don't want to edit anymore.
But at least we have two people that know how to do it now.
There you go.
Beautiful. All right, so why don't we jump into our reviews, reactions, and requests. First up from John Bernardo, started listening for the giveaway and ended up really into the episode. Thank you, John. We appreciate that. That is awesome.
Thank you.
Skite 2001 said, another nice episode. Every time a big enjoyment. Keep it up. Stay safe. And greetings from Germany. Thank you. What is it? Guten Tag is hello. So what's thank you? I don't know.
Please don't embarrass the podcaster.
Donkashay, that's the one. Beautiful.
Donkashay. Darling Donkashay.
Thank you.
And lastly, from Doongi Forever, another great episode. It's one of the things I look forward to every Friday. Jim from Drink a Beer and Play a Game was great, but I miss Writer's View's crazy laugh. LOL.
Crazy laugh.
She now has a new one.
Yeah, now it's pretty crazy. Ha ha ha.
Spot on, Macy Gray. That's all I'm going to say. You're doing a great job.
Cool. I'm doing a good job. And now it's time for the very important. I figure I didn't have to try that hard to have a funny voice.
I appreciate the effort. No, that took a lot.
It did. I kind of hurt myself a little bit.
A lot of effort on that one.
Yep. Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, that is our very important poll. And if you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question this week, when someone mentions the PS1, what is the first game that comes to mind? In third place, we have Castlevania Symphony of the Night with 16%. Metal Gear Solid was in second place with 26.3%. And the winner was Final Fantasy VII with 33.9% of the votes. We also had 23.8% of people vote other. So let's look at some of the comments from the poll. At Buttlord Primus says, Final Fantasy IX. It may have come out at the end of the PS1 lifespan, but it's still one of my favorite games of all time. A beautiful world with complex characters, incredible music, and a plot rich with tragedy. At Czar Leo said, as much as I want to say Tactics Ogre or Final Fantasy Tactics, it's NASCAR Rumble / NASCAR games in general. Split screen with my dad was a riot. He's dead, but I still like to randomly remind him that 5 wide at Bristol doesn't go well, LOL. At Victo Rance says, Madden Football. I was in college, and I recall there being a demo station on campus for the PS1. Madden Football was the demo game, and the combination of the controller feel / response plus gameplay instantly made me say this will be big. At Corvus Angelus said, the game that kicked off my favorite franchise, Silent Hill. And at Would You Kindly said, always be Wipeout for me. That game single-handedly took the game's console out of the bedroom and into the mainstream. So how did you vote in the poll, Donnie?
So there were a lot of games that scream, I'm the PS1, okay? All the ones mentioned here are great. Metal Gear Solid, love that game. One of my favorites, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, Final Fantasy VII. Even, you know, the early Madden games and Silent Hill, all great games. But for me, it was a toss-up between the original Tomb Raider. That was the very first game that I purchased. I was in Fort Lee, Virginia in 1996, just finishing up my AIT. And Donnie had a little bit of money in his bank account, and he decided he was going to go blow it all, almost all of it, on a PlayStation. So I was at this mall. It was one Sunday, like a couple days before we were supposed to go back home. And I walked into a Babbage's and I picked up a PS1. A PS1 with another controller and Tomb Raider. And I got it back to the barracks into my room and hooked it up. And it was just, I was like, wow, I finally have my PS1. It was Tomb Raider. And another one would be the original Resident Evil. There was actually two other games that I was going to say, and that was Tekken and Battle Arena Toshinden, because those were the two games I played on it first at a friend's house. But Tomb Raider will always hold a special place in my heart because that was the very first game that I owned for the PlayStation.
Okay. What about you, Ryan?
Final Fantasy VII, of course, was a game that it's near and dear to my heart. But honestly, when I first think of the PlayStation 1, the first game that comes to mind for me is Twisted Metal 2. And a lot of that has to do with just how much time me and my brother played that game. It's probably the best Twisted Metal, at least in my opinion. But, you know, one of the things that made it so special is that it had the co-op option, right? So it wasn't just, you know, one player or it wasn't two players playing against each other. You had to work together. And often it was me and Jim trying to figure out new tactics. We would find places that were, you know, opportunities to hide, you know, and we would work together. And that was what made it so much more fun than your average game where you're just competing against someone else. The music's fantastic. The gameplay elements are really, really tight and done well. I don't know if we ever beat it together, though. I want to say, like, the farthest we got was probably New York, which is, I think, yeah, it's probably two or three levels before the end. But still, we would turn that sucker on, you know, at least once a week, it seemed like. And absolutely, absolutely love that game.
Nice.
Right on.
Blue, what about you?
So I never had a PS1. I was taking a break from gaming at that time around the PS1 N64 era. So I don't have a lot of, experience playing PS1 games. But when I would hear other people talk about their PS1s or when I would see commercials on TV, the three games that most tempted me to say I would like one of those were Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which was how I voted in the poll, and then also Silent Hill and Resident Evil. Because I love horror games. Those were the three for me that made me go, well, maybe I should see if I should get one of these. I never did, so I'm still catching up on that library. But those are the top three for sure.
Excellent choices.
All great classics.
I'm surprised since Thea Knight got third place. I really am. That game is so well revered nowadays. People absolutely love it. It's the introduction to the Metroidvania genre. And man... fact that it only got 60%, I was hugely surprised.
That's just because it was up against Metal Gear Solid and Final Fantasy VII.
True. Both of those are, you know, classics as well. But
right.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a look at our patron shoutouts. We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon. We have a new patron to announce. Please give a big welcome to Ducks with Thick Thighs. That's great. Welcome, Ducks with Thick Thighs. They'll be joining Fruitcake's number one Stan, the Wizard of Zardoz, Clayman71, Great Siaman81, BNT Zilligai, Geek With That, Crunchy Kong, Sure Snacks, Frank Grande, JNL Game, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, Davey PGH, the Redox PDX family, including Shannon and Luke, Zach Huge Thanks, Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gametroid, Emo Esque, Bill Tucker, and Rye Bread's number one fan. If you like what you hear today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more.
All right, so why don't we jump into our headlines for the week? Our headline segment is proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Currently, they want to hear your memories of the Magnavox Odyssey in honor of the console's 50-year anniversary. Send your answers to email at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. Now, I have never played a Magnavox Odyssey before. Have either of you?
No, we have had a box for one at one point. So Mr. Blue knew somebody who said, hey, I've got this really old game console in a box in my garage. Do you want it? He's like, yeah, sure. So they come, they bring out a Magnavox Odyssey box. And we're like, holy crap, look at that. So he brings it home school. And we open it up. And it's actually an Atari 2600 inside.
Oh, the old Wamboozle.
Right. And the box was cool, but it was just beat to hell. Like, the kids in the family had scribbled all over it and everything. So it was kind of a real shame, but still cool to see.
Who drew the d- on the Magnavox Odyssey box?
Ralph Baer would be very disappointed.
Right. All right, first up, from gamesindustry.biz, PlayStation says Xbox's Call of Duty offer was inadequate on many levels. Microsoft has promised to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation for 3 years beyond the current agreement between Activision and Sony, says PlayStation CEO Jim Ryan. In a statement provided to GamesIndustry.biz, Ryan says the offer was inadequate on many levels. The disagreement between the two companies follows Microsoft's offer to buy Call of Duty publisher Activision Blizzard in a deal worth nearly $69 billion. Last week, Xbox revealed that it had provided a signed agreement to Sony to guarantee Call of Duty on PlayStation with feature and content parity for at least several more years beyond Sony's existing contract with Activision. Xbox said this offer goes well beyond typical gaming agreements. However, Sony says the offer fails to consider the impact on PlayStation gamers. I hadn't intended to comment on what I understood to be a private business discussion, but I feel the need to set the record straight because Phil Spencer brought this into the public forum, Ryan stated. Microsoft has only offered for Call of Duty to remain on PlayStation for 3 years after the current agreement between Activision and Sony ends. After almost 20 years of Call of Duty on PlayStation, their proposal was inadequate on many levels and failed to take account of the impact on our gamers. We want to guarantee PlayStation gamers continue to have the highest quality Call of Duty experience, and Microsoft's proposal undermines this principle.
Stop whining and then go buy Activision Blizzard yourself.
I know. This does come across as kind of whiny, doesn't it?
It most certainly does. I'm sorry that you were a little bit late to the party. I'm sorry that Activision Blizzard chose Microsoft's offer over yours, but that's just the nature of the business now. Microsoft has no obligation whatsoever to keep Call of Duty releasing on the PlayStation. None. Zero. Zilch.
Right.
The simple fact that they're giving you 3 years after your contract with Activision ends, I think that's a pretty good deal for them.
Right. Do you think if things were reversed, if Sony had bought Call of Duty, would they be giving the same consideration to Microsoft, or would they just cut them off?
Probably
not. I kind of feel like they'd be cutting them off.
I mean, they can say whatever they want to in hindsight, like, oh, no, we would totally respect the Microsoft gamer community and we would not take away right. Call of Duty from that. No, screw that. You're trying to resurrect the console wars of the 90s.
Exactly. Where
now you have certain games that are only on certain consoles. And what did we do back then? We were forced to buy the other console. Plain and simple. Any release specifically for the Super Nintendo. Okay, Sega Genesis kids were like, I really want to play that. Mom, can you buy me my Super Nintendo now? That's how it went. And that's how it's going to be. Unfortunately, these consoles are astronomically more expensive than what they were back then.
You know, and Sony has historically not played in the sandbox with everybody else. So there are many instances where Sony does not want to allow crossplay with a lot of their games. And they have, you know, specific exclusives that they do. It's almost like they're the kid that gets upset and plays in his own sandbox, right? He's like, I'm going to be over here with my toys. You guys are jerks. And then expects Microsoft to be welcoming to their gamers and to their IPs and stuff. It sounds a little backwards from what they've historically been doing.
Right. I mean, I understand the fear, I guess, that there will be a mass exodus of Call of Duty players once it's no longer available on PlayStation. I can understand that fear. But you can either whine about it and try to endear yourself to Microsoft via whining, or you can figure out some way to get those gamers to stay with PlayStation, offer them something else right. that Xbox can't.
Come up with your own Call of Duty game. I mean, let's be honest. Call of Duty is a great game, but it's a war game. Is it really that unique?
Yeah, they've tried it with, I think, Medal of Honor. Medal of Honor was a great series prior to Call of Duty. I remember playing Medal of Honor back, I think, like 1998, 1999, even 2000. Playing it online, private servers with GameSpy and all that. And then it just went away as soon as Call of Duty came. And they were kind of the same because they were all set in World War II. But then once Call of Duty took on the whole modern warfare motif, it flew away. Medal of Honor, EA tried resurrecting Medal of Honor in the whole modern warfare setting. It just didn't do well. And I think it's because it was EA and they screwed it all up.
But yeah,
I don't know if you can come up with another war game that can rival what Modern Warfare does.
But what does it make it unique, though? What specifically about Call of Duty makes it that much better than what was offered up by EA?
War shooters were a dime a dozen throughout the early 2000s and the 2010s.
For sure.
And there's a reason that Call of Duty is the only one that still remains. Like, Mr. Blue tried out so many of those other war shooters, and none of them could nail the gameplay to the same level that Call of Duty could. They were always slow, or they were clunky, or they were this or that. None of it was able to offer the same actual gameplay experience that Call of Duty did.
And I guess maybe I'm ignorant to that, because I didn't really get into war shooters. I remember my friends would play SOCOM back in the day, Medal of Honor and Call of Duty. But Halo was also the big one as well, which that's, I guess you could technically call that a war shooter. But first-person shooters aren't exactly like the hardest games, I would imagine, at least, to program for. But I guess if Call of Duty has the right special sauce, if you will.
Yeah.
Giggity.
It's got the nice set of herbs and spices.
But you can at least try to create another one.
It's the, we have to compare the risk reward. If we spend millions of dollars in development of this new IP, this new first-person shooter IP, and we want it to topple Warzone, and it doesn't, how much money are we realistically going to get back from this investment?
But to that point, though, if you don't create a Call of Duty game and 3 years after it comes, or the 3 years ellipses or what have you, elapses, then you're up you-know-what creek without a paddle because you don't have a Call of Duty. So potentially there's a loss there for consoles that people are going to switch over. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly. All right, next up from Games Radar, Gargoyles is the next classic Disney game getting a remaster. And amongst the huge announcements this weekend comes confirmation that 90s platformer Gargoyles is getting the remaster treatment. Described as a fan favorite that's sure to have you screaming like a Viking yeeted by Goliath, the original game, a 2D Castlevania-esque action platformer, loosely followed the plot of the show and was released almost 30 years ago in 1995. It joins other classics like The Lion King and Aladdin in getting a remaster several decades after its original release. We don't have a release date, but a later press release confirmed that the classic 90s platformer will be coming to modern consoles and PC with updated visuals and controls. In other news fresh from D23, the heavily rumored Iron Man game may not have made an appearance, but industry insider Jeff Grubb reckons it's still on the way. And did you catch the news that a brand new 2D cooperative adventure Mickey Mouse platformer is on the way exclusively to Nintendo Switch, Disney Illusion Island? Though based on a canceled project from 2016, Disney said that whilst it wasn't exactly the same game, it was being developed by the same studio, whilst.
Whilst,
the
yes.
Same studio, Dalala, and will feature the same characters. I don't know.
Good enough.
So this is yesterday was the first time that I think I knew that a Gargoyles game existed. And I only knew of this because somebody in my area was selling a Sega Genesis with about 8 games, and one of them was Gargoyles. And I was like, huh, I didn't know they made a Gargoyles. And today we have the announcement that it's getting a remaster. So,
yeah, I never played this back in 95. I was too busy playing Aladdin and Lion King. But if it's the Castlevania-esque action platformer, that sounds fun. I might give it a try.
Yeah, if it's on the same par as like Aladdin and Lion King, sure.
Yeah, but I think the fact that you don't hear about it, we're pretty, you know, in the retro gaming scene. And neither of us knew it existed, so I'm not sure that's a great sign.
Well, you call yourself a retro gamer? You didn't know this one existed? Right. Oh, my God.
Like, I remember the show pretty vividly. I don't remember them ever coming out with a game, though, for it.
See, yeah, this is what I'm saying. We haven't heard of this game. That's not a great sign.
And, you know, Disney has so many IPs that they could be coming out with for games. And they're like, you know what? There's a guy in our office that just cannot stop talking about Gargoyles. So, you know what? Let's throw shut him up. Yeah, let's shut him up for a little bit and let's remaster Gargoyles. The kids will love it.
Right.
Right. Yeah, but what I do remember from the Super Nintendo is all the Mickey Mouse platformers that they had. They had the Magical Quest, Mickey Mania.
Yeah, the Genesis games, Castle of Illusion, World of Illusion as well.
Right, right, right.
And Mickey's Ultimate Quest.
Quackshot, Downey's favorite, Quackshot.
Bring back Quackshot.
That was a cheap shot.
Cheap shot for Quackshot. Love it.
I'm not above a cheap shot. So in some ways, I kind of like this idea of a new Mickey Mouse platformer coming out, but it's co-op.
They keep trying and they keep trying. They're shoving it down our throats to play with other people. Just leave me the F alone
right.
and let me do this stuff by myself.
That's part of the reason people our age became gamers. Right. We just wanted to play by ourselves.
Not with ourselves, by ourselves.
Well,
no, there's some of that too.
Yeah, okay.
All right, from Nintendo Life, random. Billy Mitchell claims doctor won't see him due to the Donkey Kong cheating accusations. By this point, you've heard of Donkey Kong. Then you've probably heard of Billy Mitchell. The former King of Kong held multiple world records in arcade games such as Pac-Man and the aforementioned, but many have since called into question, with some accusing him of playing via MAME. Mitchell denies the allegation and has even taken action against Guinness World Records supplier Twin Galaxies. Now, due to those allegations, Mitchell is claiming that his doctor of 30 years is refusing to see him because he believes he's a cheat. In a testimony shared on Perfect Pac-Man, this rather unusual claim states, after Twin Galaxies' defamatory statements on April 12, 2019, one of responding party's doctors, by the way, this is like legalese and responding party, that's Billy Mitchell.
Ipso facto.
Dr. Stanley Scopit refused to see responding party after responding party appeared for an annual examination. When responding party arrived for his examination, the assistant to Dr. Scopit informed Mitchell that Dr. Scopit would not see him. The assistant informed responding party that Dr. Scopit read the allegations from Twin Galaxies. Mitchell states that the stress of the case has caused him to suffer a hernia and atrial fibrillation. This testimony comes as part of the deposition process. The lawsuit with Mitchell and Twin Galaxies is ongoing, but the saga has been continuing for a good few years now, with no signs of stopping soon.
First of all, this guy's a doctor and his last name is Scopit.
I'm telling you, man, my last name is Payne. I should have been an anesthesiologist. That would have been perfect.
A dentist. You should have been a dentist.
Well, no one would see me. Nobody's going to Dr. Payne, the dentist.
I don't know. They're going to Dr. Scopit.
Right.
So Billy obviously is somebody who has a reputation for being quite litigious. So the fact that he's suing somebody for something is not surprising in the least.
No.
There's also, he is known for being litigious in order to use it as a PR move. For example, this whole lawsuit with Twin Galaxies, he is using it as a means to essentially state his case that he is not a cheater. When I think the evidence has been presented in a lot of different ways publicly, and it's a little difficult, I think, for the most part, to deny right. some of these allegations. Now, with that being said, if this is truly the case, that is pretty messed up. You know, doctors, of course, take the Hippocratic Oath that says that they have to take care of patients who mm-hmm. are in need. So if that's the case, then Billy certainly has reason to sue, but I have a hard time believing this. It just sounds to me like maybe the doctor wouldn't see him for some other reason. And he's just like, you know what? I could totally use this current thing that I'm in order to gain some additional publicity.
I didn't even see it from that standpoint. If that's the case, that's pretty shitty. Mm-hmm.
No, I could absolutely believe that would be the case because Billy Mitchell, of course, never met the man, but everything I know about him, he seems like a complete and total drama queen. Maybe he's...
E.T., we don't want to get sued.
You know, maybe he's a non-compliant patient, and maybe the doctor gently suggested that a different provider might be better able to provide for him, and Billy is just running with it, absolutely.
And like you were saying, Ryan, the Hippocratic Oath, they're supposed to be taking care of people. And I can't see something like this coming in the way. Like, oh, you cheated at one of my favorite video games. I'm going to refuse to see you and treat you. That sounds like a load of bullshit.
It really does.
And he's been accused for this for decades almost of cheating.
Right.
So you're telling me that this guy just found out now that Billy Mitchell is a cheater?
He's a little bit behind on the times.
When was he originally accused of cheating?
Oh, geez. When did the King of Kong come out? Because it was right after that, wasn't it?
Yep.
King of Kong came out in like 2007.
So this guy is a big enough fan of Billy Mitchell that he would be so offended that he cheated, or Twin Galaxies said he cheated, that he would stop seeing him as a patient, but not such a big fan that he would go see King of Kong?
That's what Billy is purporting. Yes.
Okay.
Again, if it's true, messed up, very messed up. And I apologize, Billy, if that is 100% the case, but
we're not buying it.
Yeah, I'm not buying it. I'm really not.
Yeah. You've cried wolf a few too many times there, Billy.
All right. So why don't we jump into our top three new releases?
All right, first up is Metal Hellsinger, out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Slay to the rhythm of metal and vengeance on an infernal journey through the eight hells. Metal Hellsinger is a rhythm FPS bursting with demons, badass weapons, and heavy metal music. Wayward Strand is out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Wayward Strand is a heartfelt story told in a curious way. Hop aboard an airborne hospital and meet its fully voiced cast of eclectic characters. As time passes for everyone on board, explore the interwoven lives of the patients and staff. Discover something new on each and every playthrough. And finally, Return to Monkey Island, out on the Switch and PC. Return to Monkey Island is an unexpected, thrilling return of series creator Ron Gilbert that continues the story of the legendary adventure games The Secret of Monkey Island and Monkey Island 2 LeChuck's Revenge, developed in collaboration with Lucasfilm Games. Banter with old friends and new faces on familiar islands now under dangerous new leadership. Then take to the high seas and explore the new and unknown as you work your way out of tough predicaments. Clever puzzles, bizarre situations, and devastating riposte are all that stand between Guybrush and glory. So out of these three games, which one are you looking at, Ryan?
Metal Hellsinger, or Hellsinger. I saw the, I don't remember specifically which con, or expo that they had where they debuted this game, but it looks pretty freaking cool. I'm not like big into rhythm games, but what a unique way to flip rhythm games on their head, turn it into a first person shooter with metal music. Sign me the heck up. And it's funny because I'm picking that over Return to Monkey Island, which I do like already, but this kind of game, I'm ready to try something new. And I think Metal Hellsinger is right up my alley because I love metal music. I love killing stuff, and now you can kill stuff with metal music. So, best day ever.
I love killing stuff. Wait a second. What?
I love killing sprites on the TV. Is that better?
There you go. That's a lot better.
Well, though it's too late. Somebody could totally take it out of context already.
Yep.
It has been recorded.
I'm going to be at like a murder trial, and they'll be like, Mr. Payne, did you say this?
It's not what I meant. No,
there's more context, I swear.
What about you, Donnie?
I have a love-hate relationship with Monkey Island. I like the series. I like how funny it is. I like how challenging it is. But also, I hate how challenging it is because it's so weird and eclectic. The headspace that you have to be in, it's like you have to be under the influence of DMT and THC at the same time to appreciate the weirdness of this game. Like, who, one of the things that still blows my mind is like, you had to feed this plant ipecac to make it throw up. Who the hell knows what ipecac is?
That's the weird part. Not that you're feeding to a plant to make a plant throw up.
Exactly. It's like, who the hell knows what this stuff is? Don't get me wrong. The game is fun, but it's because of that little niche thing right there that makes me want to steer clear of Return to Monkey Island. I'm probably going to get it at some point or play it, but I'm with Ryan on this one. Metal Hellsinger looks fun. I've seen only bits and pieces of the gameplay, and I'm eager to try it out. What about you, Blue? Which one's your proposed pick of the week?
Well, I'd really like to go with Metal Hellsinger because it's so unique, kind of like you guys were already saying. And so I'd like to support a game like that and check it out and hopefully enjoy it. But I just hate shooters, first-person shooters. I hate them with a passion. So probably that steers me over to Return to Monkey Island, which I'll be honest, I'm not that excited about. I am one of those people who didn't like the new art style, although I'm fully support Ron Gilbert's right to design his game however the hell he chooses. Right. I'm not going to argue with that. But at the same time, looking at the art style makes me just go, it just doesn't seem as appealing as it used to. But out of the three of these, I would go for that one.
Wasn't he of the mind of, if you don't like it, well, then F you?
He got harassed so much that I think that's what it came down to.
Good for him, too.
Yeah.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Yeah. It's my video game and I'm going home.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and announce our giveaway? As you probably know from last episode, we were giving away a copy of Gelatinous Humanity Lost for the Game Boy, which was, of course, a homebrew game created by our friends John Rue and Stephen Long. And we are super, super happy to announce who is our winner. Congratulations. Wait. What?
Aren't we going to do the drum roll thing like always?
Fine. Drum roll, please. Congratulations to Nick Hoyt from iFightDragons21. You will be receiving a brand new copy of Gelatinous Humanity Lost. We will be reaching out to you here on Saturday, but we hope that you enjoy the game and congratulations. And thanks to everybody who submitted an entry. You guys are all awesome. All right, so why don't we jump into our main topic for the week?
This past Tuesday brought us both a Nintendo Direct and Sony State of Play. So let's cover the highlights from both showcases. From Nintendo Life, everything announced in the September 2022 Nintendo Direct. Another Nintendo Direct has graced the internet, bringing with it a host of awesome announcements and updates. Clocking in at 40 minutes in length, we've got a hunch there was probably something for everybody here, regardless of what kind of games you're into. Not much murky space horror, though.
Nintendo and Intelligent System announced a brand new Fire Emblem mainline game, Fire Emblem Engage. New game seems to bring old favorites together with some new characters and a protagonist with curiously colored hair. Plus, the game is out pretty darn soon, January 20th, 2023. You'll also be able to pre-order a Divine Edition, which features a steelbook and an art book ahead of the game's 20th January launch. Gamers could step into the oversized shoes of one of Nickelodeon's most beloved heroes in SpongeBob SquarePants, the Cosmic Shake. Coming to a variety of consoles in 2023, designed by Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated developer Purple Lamp Studios and published by THQ Nordic. The game is considered a spiritual successor to Rehydrated, but will feature an all-new story starring SpongeBob and his friends.
Oh my god.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
SpongeBob SquarePants!
Absorbent and yellow and porous is he!
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Wow.
Had to do it. Sorry.
Okay. Fitness boxing developer Imagineer has revealed its new Switch game, Fitness Boxing Fist of the North Star. Yes, it's crossing over with the popular manga and anime series Fist of the North Star. You can look forward to getting your hands on this unique fitness experience in March 2023. You might recall that Front Mission First and Front Mission 2 remakes were confirmed during the Nintendo Direct presentation in February. Now, publisher Forever Entertainment has showcased more footage for both titles and confirmed that, yes, a third remake is also on the way. Front Mission First will launch on Switch this coming November, while Front Mission 2 is due sometime in 2023. Front Mission 3, meanwhile, is due at some point.
And by the way, that wasn't Blue pausing. That's exactly
that is how it is written.
The Nintendo Direct Showcase has just confirmed that the next Splatoon 3 Splatfest is coming September 23 through 25th. The theme for this one is slightly more unusual than those we have seen before, with you having to choose what you would bring to a deserted island. Gear, grub, or fun? The announcement also confirmed that more updates will be coming soon, so keep your eyes peeled for more stages, stories, and more. Nintendo has officially announced Octopath Traveler 2, a brand new follow-up to Square Enix's 2018 hit retro-style RPG. Path actions for each of the new 8 characters will change depending on the time of day, with all base jobs reminiscent of the game's initial 8. The sequel launches in 2023.
Nintendo has announced a new batch of Nintendo 64 games will be coming to the expansion pack tier of its Nintendo Switch Online subscription service. Pilot Wings 64, Mario Party, and Mario Party 2 will launch in 2022, while Mario Party 3, Pokemon Stadium, Pokemon Stadium 2, 1080 Snowboarding, and Excitebike 64 will launch in 2023. Nintendo has confirmed that GoldenEye 007, Rare's seminal N64 first-person shooter, which has never officially been released on any other console, is coming soon. The direct announce was light on specifics, with no release date given, but online play has been confirmed.
Squee! It feels like Wave 2 for Mario Kart 8 Deluxe's DLC Pass only just launched, but we're already looking ahead to Wave 3. Nintendo confirmed that 8 more courses will be arriving at the start line this holiday season. The brief trailer showed us 2 of the upcoming 8 tracks that we'll be burning rubber on in the near future. Merry Mountain from Mario Kart Tour and Peach Gardens from Mario Kart DS. In an announcement that we genuinely hadn't predicted, Shigeru Miyamoto just made an appearance at the Nintendo Direct Showcase to reveal that Pikmin 4 is on its way, finally. While there was little in terms of gameplay or release information, Miyamoto stated that the game is going to employ a new Pikmin deployment mechanic in which you will be able to play in a mode much closer to the ground.
Originally released on Wii back in 2011, Kirby's Sword Swinging Adventure is coming to the Switch in Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe on February 24th, 2023. The game is set to bring over all of the powered-up fun from the original and combine it with some new features such as the Mecha Copy ability, which seems to turn Kirby into something of a blaster-wielding transformer. Nintendo has finally announced the real title for the game formerly known as The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild 2. Say hello to The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, launching on May 12, 2023. The new trailer doesn't give much away in terms of new gameplay, focusing on some stonewall art in the opening section before following Link as he leaps into the sky and onto a stone bird-looking flying creature. Didn't they announce something for Fatal Frame?
They did, but there was like 1,700 announcements. Oh, okay. I tried to focus on like the new stuff.
So Fatal Frame isn't good enough for you?
They've covered Fatal Frame in directs before.
Have they?
Yeah.
Man, this is the first time I'm hearing of it. And you say you like horror games.
I do like horror games. I've talked about Fatal Frame before when we've discussed, I think in February when we discussed that direct.
I'm just sitting back here going, I'm some popcorn.
I was like, what is that noise? Was not clear at the beginning that that was a popcorn noise.
It's munch, munch.
So fun. Besides Fatal Frame 4, what are you looking forward to?
Well, obviously, Splatfest for Splatoon 3, but gear, grub, and fun. Oh, Nintendo. You're so weird.
Well, I need food to survive, but
in this particular instance, I'm going with fun, man. I'm only going to be on that desert island for a little while, so might as well fun.
Hey, for a good time, not a long time.
That's right. Octopath Traveler 2 looks really cool. I actually never played the original, so I would love to play through the original and then as I get ready for this one, so that'll probably be something that I end up doing. And the N64 expansion with Mario Party 1 and 2, the fact that it'll be online so you can play with friends is definitely a huge draw. So for sure interested in those.
You're not going to be playing GoldenEye?
Yeah, I probably will. Considering I'm probably going to pick up that Hori N64 controller that they've got that's compatible with the Switch. My biggest gripes with GoldenEye really have to do with how it runs on the N64. So I would imagine if they're going to release this stuff, and obviously if it was something that they were just going to do a straight up re-release, it would have gone on the N64 expansion pack. So chances are, so it's just going to be a straight up release, re-release.
Yeah, that's actually when I've seen people online complaining about it. They're complaining that it's just a straight port with no polish or anything.
I was under the impression they added that they were going to change like so just some basic polish to the game.
That's what they are doing. They are polishing it. I've seen a preview of it, and I've seen the levels are they look much smoother, a lot clearer. If that's the case, if they've polished it up and whatnot, I'd love to play this game. I'd love to get reacquainted with it, and especially with newer controls. Sure.
The aiming convention on GoldenEye is so rough compared to what I've experienced in the future and moving forward. I would love for them to clean it up and make it more like a modern first-person shooter. That would be much, much better.
I think they would have to do that.
So this is according to IGN. As revealed by 007.com, there are two versions of GoldenEye, despite being announced at the same time, and they will not include the same features. The Nintendo version appears to be staying relatively similar to the original, but with the addition of online multiplayer, and this will be added as a standard N64 game to the Switch Online library. The Xbox version, on the other hand, will be a remastered version.
So that's where the confusion is coming from. Got it.
With improved graphics, but no online play.
Oh, come on.
That's a little
man, this is you can't have your cake and eat it too, right?
Nope, you get to pick one.
Or you get to buy both of them.
Yeah, or that. But yeah, the Switch one is just a straight port.
Come on, guys, do better than this.
So no, I'm not doing GoldenEye.
Jesus, like, come on, give us more than this. Microsoft's choice of remastering it and making it look very beautiful, sure. But the whole thing about that game was the multiplayer, playing against other people.
Right.
I mean, you could still do the local multiplayer.
Because I have so many friends.
Right. I don't want you people coming over to my house. No, bad move. I think this is a bad move all around.
Okay. Anything else stand out to you?
No, now that I'm so upset.
I'm looking forward to the new releases of the Mario Kart tracks. I've been having a lot of fun playing Mario Kart recently, getting familiar with the newer stuff that's come out, trying to acquaint myself with the existing maps and trying to beat somebody in particular, which is not going very well. But more tracks to try and learn and take this person down. I'm looking forward to that. Now, Breath of the Wild 2 or Tears of the Kingdom, I haven't seen yet. Still haven't played Breath of the Wild, although my son, my youngest, he's like knee deep into it right now. He's getting very far into the game. He's telling me all this stuff about it. So I'm learning a lot from him. I will get to that game at some point. Mm-hmm. What about you, Blue? What's on your agenda here?
Definitely looking forward to Breath of the Wild 2. I like the debate that's going on online, whether it's Tears of the Kingdom or Tears of the Kingdom.
Tears, really?
Yeah, tears, because they're spelled the same, and in the direct, nobody actually said the name of it. It just popped up on the screen. So I'm guessing Tears of the Kingdom. That sounds better, I guess.
It's the more logical choice.
Yeah, but we really don't know.
Tears a new asshole. Right.
Also looking forward to Octopath Traveler 2. I still need to finish the first one, but this one looks like it has 8 brand new characters with 8 brand new stories. So maybe it doesn't matter if you played the first one or not. More Mario Kart 8 tracks will be great. And actually, I'm a little surprised, Ryan, you didn't say anything about Front Mission First and Front Mission 2, because it looked like turn-based Gundam. I thought you'd be all over that.
There's so much to choose from at this point, and I'm so to the mentality of sticking to stuff that I already know. I know that I said Octopath Traveler would be something I would be into, but that's a retro style RPG, so that's like going home to mama for me. So yeah, would I check it out? Absolutely. It's just priorities right now.
Have we already reached the pinnacle? I mean, like you just said, there's so much out there. There's so many new stuff or so many new things coming out. It's like you're so inundated with all this variety that it almost seems like too much.
But you like variety.
I do. I love variety.
You say that all the time.
I know, and I like it in all types of things, but I don't know, with games, it seems like there is just game after game after game after game after game after game after game. And now you just got this bit, you're like Scrooge McDuck swimming in a big vault of games, and you're like, none of these games I've played, but they're all, some might be great, some might be total pieces of crap. It's like, what am I going to spend my time on?
I hope this isn't the pinnacle. I want more. Always more.
Well, there's not going to be more because every game studio is being bought up by the big three. So,
yeah, you got a point there.
Okay. Well, it's still not the pinnacle because we don't have Silk Song yet. So there.
Okay. That'll be the pinnacle. Okay.
That'll be the pinnacle.
Blue's litmus test.
Yep.
All right. From GameSpot. Biggest PlayStation State of Play September 2022 announcements. The September PlayStation State of Play live stream has concluded featuring announcements related to nearly a dozen upcoming games. The biggest reveal was undoubtedly the big closer, a new game trailer for God of War Ragnarok. That said, we got to see a lot of cool-looking projects coming from these PlayStation Japanese partners, as well as more titles scheduled for launch for PS VR 2 in 2023. Bandai Namco kicked off the show with a first look at Tekken 8, the next installment of long-running fighting game franchise. The brief teaser trailer showed Jin Kazama facing off against his father, Kazuya Mishima, on a rainy, rocky cliff. Tekken 8 will be coming to the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, and PC via stream sometime in the future, as no set release date or window has been revealed with the trailer.
Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge Enhanced Edition is coming to PSVR 2 in 2023. A new trailer for the game reveals plenty of familiar faces from the Star Wars universe, including everyone's favorite pirate Hondo. Like a Dragon Ishin, a Yakuza spinoff set in 1860s Kyo, a fictionalized version of Kyoto, was announced for PS4 and PS5. The release date is February 2023. Like a Dragon Ishin was originally released in Japan in 2014 under the title Ryogo Gotoku Ishin. It never received a global release, and this new Like a Dragon Ishin is a remake of the original in Unreal Engine 4.
Like a Dragon.
Hey! Shift Up's action-packed PS5 game Project Eve debuted a new trailer at the PlayStation State of Play, along with its new title, Stellar Blade. The cinematic showed a transhumanist old man speaking about the fall of humanity, followed by a couple of characters exploring a vast area full of people in hibernation. As before, the action looks frenetic and quick, with your character transitioning between melee and gun-based combat.
Alongside a new trailer, PlayStation revealed a first look at a God of War Ragnarok-branded DualSense controller. The new gameplay trailer mixes in cinematic moments, such as basically everyone questioning Kratos' judgment, including himself, while also offering an extended look at the game's combat systems and incredible-looking environments. Alongside that trailer also comes the reveal of a God of War Ragnarok-branded DualSense controller. It features an icy white and blue style inspired by Midgard, along with images of a bear, Kratos, and a wolf, Atreus, on the touchpad. The controller will be available on the same day as the game itself, November 9th. However, unlike the game, the controller appears to be a PS5 exclusive, as no DualShock Force version was revealed.
Boo! Boo! PS5 exclusive! Boo!
You weren't going to get it anyway.
I want to look cool while I play!
Well, that ain't happening anyway.
I'm
sorry. I didn't mean that.
Can you play the music from The Hulk and just pretend that I'm walking away? So, Blue, what are you most excited for being the PS5 owner of the group?
Well, God of War Ragnarok looks amazing. Can't wait for that one. But actually, the one that I was really surprised about was Tekken 8. I'm not good at Tekken. I suck at it, but I still love it. And I feel like when Tekken 7 came out, however long ago it was, and it was a long time, I feel like that was branded as being the conclusion of the series. And the way the game ends, it kind of feels that way. It seemed legit. So I'm really excited to see that they're going to continue making Tekken games.
It's like the Friday of the 13th of fighting games. You think it's over? Yeah. Guess what?
Right.
So I thought there was, what's the other, Heihachi?
Right.
Okay, so I might be a little bit confused with the whole Tekken lineage, but I seem to remember in one of the Tekkens, either Tekken 6 or Tekken 7, where it was Heihachi Mishima fighting either Jin or Kazuya Mishima. So now we've got the other. We've got Jin versus Kazuya. Yeah.
Heihachi is the, like, the grandfather. Kazuya is the father and Jin is the son. And basically, throughout the series, they just take turns trying to kill each other and throw each other off cliffs. So,
okay.
That's basically all you need to know to get caught up.
The police would, like, camp out on cliffs around that area. Just
we got you.
Right.
This is a sting operation. How long have you been waiting here? Months. I'm with you on this one, Blue, though. I think Tekken's probably the one that interests me the most out of these. It's been a while since I've really gotten back into Tekken, so it would be fun to revisit the series. And you know, fighting games I'm not amazing at, but they're still fun, and honestly, against the computer, it's relatively easy, so I can feel good about myself and then go online for 2 minutes and feel bad.
Relatively easy? Have you played Mortal Kombat?
I have. I played a lot
against
of
computer.
Yeah,
man, I feel like Mortal Kombat 2 took it to the next level as far as, like, the difficulty. Once you get further into the game, like, the AI does not let up at all. And then Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate is a completely different, and, like, you get the shit beat out of you.
Just get good, scrub.
Wow, really?
You should just play the modern Mortal Kombat games where they have the auto combo options.
There you go.
What?
Yep.
Oh, that sounds like crap. Auto combo. Yeah.
I mean, if you're just playing against the computer, single player, just want to see the story, why not?
It's just such a strange thing to me. You know, obviously starting off with fighting games back in the day, like, you'd be interested in the story of a fighting game. Like, man, I gotta get into this.
Well, you know, there's the nice love story between Sonya and Johnny Cage. So
I didn't know there was a love story between those two.
Spoilers, then. Yeah,
son,
they get together, they have a kid. You can play as the kid.
What?
Yep.
They have a kid.
Yep. Cassie Cage.
God. What did I miss?
You missed a lot, apparently.
I have. I've got Mortal Kombat X11. I just really haven't paid much attention to the story, but holy crap. They have a kid. So with Tekken, I mean, I'm looking forward to Tekken 2, but what are they going to do differently?
Probably nothing.
Yeah. How many Mortal Kombat games are there?
You're right. But look what Street Fighter has done differently now with their new release coming up with Street Fighter 6. They're turning that into a whole start at the beginning, start with nothing, and build your fighter up into this, you know, kind of like great fighter. Is Tekken going to follow suit and do something similar?
That would be cool. Probably won't have as many crotch shots in Tekken.
Or maybe it'll be gratuitous crotch shots to kind of
every match, just before everybody fights, they just zoom into the crotches.
Dong. Literally.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, based on the previous games, I would guess there would be a story mode, and then I would guess there would be an arcade mode. But yeah, I'd be really surprised to see Tekken 8 deviate very far from the formula.
I guess it's a wait and see right now.
Wait and see.
I guess it's a cliffhanger.
Boo! That was good. That was good. I'll give you that one.
What the hell is happening with my throat tonight?
Please tell me how terrible your throat feels.
Oh, God. It's like somebody, you go, man, my back hurts. Well, I had 43 back surgeries, so you should feel. But I'm allowed to gripe about my back, aren't I? Damn it.
You can gripe about your back as much as you want.
What I wouldn't give to know what heavy feels like, you insensitive prick.
So before we move on, let's take a break to talk about our sponsor. The segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Here's this week's trivia question. Most of the Koopalings from the Super Mario games are named after famous musicians. Ludwig, Iggy, Wendy-O, the list goes on. It's not just the Koopalings, though. For example, there's a recurring mini-boss in Super Mario World named for a Emmy-winning musician. Guess which one? Tune into Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find Elitist on your favorite podcast platforms, and we'll also have their links in the show notes. I actually don't know this one. I forgot to respond to Tim because I had so much stuff going on. So I actually don't know the answer. The interesting little bit of tidbit that I do know is that in the Koopalings, there is, I think, only one who isn't named after a musician, and that's Morton Koopa Jr., which was right. Named after was Robert Morton Jr., who was a talk show host.
Morton Downey Jr.
Morton Downey Jr. That's it. I'm sorry. You're right.
If I had to guess, I would guess
redacted.
Oh, there we go.
I'm not sure about the timing of that. And I'm not sure if he won an Emmy either, but.
Well, listen to the Elitist podcast and we'll be listening too to find out.
Right.
Redacted.
Redacted. Yeah. Guess by me.
Mi scusi.
All right. Thank you for coming, student. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrand's Gaming History 101. In today's lesson, we're going to talk about the man who invented cartridge-based video gaming. And no, he did not work for Atari. We, of course, are talking about the father of modern gaming, Jerry Lawson, and the Fairchild Channel F. So before I jump into this, have either of you either owned or played a Channel F before?
No.
No. Never owned it, never played it, but I have heard about it.
Right. I was so close to owning a Complete in Box one. I went to a store. It was there. I was kind of hemming and hawing, like, oh, should I pick this up? Should I not pick this up? Went back the next day, and it was freaking gone.
Of course.
One of these days, you'll learn.
That's how it happens.
Right. And it actually came with cartridge 1 through 6 as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So starting off at the beginning, Jerry, or Gerald, was born in New York City on December 1st, 1940, to a father who worked as a longshoreman and a mother who worked for the city of New York. Now, Jerry's father was a science enthusiast and his mother was strict and took Jerry's schooling very seriously, which became the perfect environment to cultivate a career in engineering for Jerry. Now, Jerry's first grade teacher also encouraged him to follow the path of George Washington Carver, which helped influence his life from there on out. Jerry would tinker with electronics almost daily, which led to him creating his own radio station at 13 years old, which is why we at Gamers Week really like Jerry. He was a video gamer and an amateur podcaster. So Jerry eventually started attending Queens College in New York, studying engineering, but most of his skills were self-taught via his tinkering sessions at home. In fact, he would continue to tinker throughout his life, and his children were quoted as saying his workshop at home was like the console of the Starship Enterprise with multiple computers all running at the same time.
That's awesome.
Indeed. After graduation, Jerry found his way to the up-and-coming Silicon Valley in California. Standing at 6'6" and over 300 pounds, Jerry was definitely a big guy, but many people referred to him as a gentle giant. Jerry was also African-American, which was very underrepresented in Silicon Valley at the time and often considered by many to be an inspiration for young African-American engineers. In 1970, he joined Fairchild Semiconductor in San Francisco as an applications consultant within their sales division. While there, he also created an early coin-op arcade game called Demolition Derby in his garage, completing it in early 1975 using Fairchild's new F8 microprocessor. Demolition Derby was among the earliest microprocessor-driven games. So in the mid-1970s, Lawson was made chief hardware engineer and director of engineering and marketing for Fairchild's video game division. This all came to fruition because of a chance meeting between Lawson and Al Alcorn, who is the famous employee number 3 who helped invent Pong for Atari. Apparently, Alcorn was shopping for parts for Pong when he reached out to Fairchild and was greeted by Jerry. They quickly became friends, and Jerry shared with Al his work on his coin-op video game, Demolition Derby, which got back to the higher-ups at Fairchild, and they promoted Jerry as they had plans to get into the blossoming video game market. While he was at Fairchild, Lawson and Ron Jones were the sole black members of the Homebrew Computer Club, a group of early computer hobbyists that included several who became known, well-known, including Apple founders Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. Lawson was noted as interviewing Wozniak for a position at Fairchild, and he did not hire him.
Mm.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting,
wow.
Right?
Wow, yeah.
So in 1974, Alpex Computer Corporation employees Wallace Kitchener and Lawrence Haskell developed a home game prototype consisting of a base unit centered on an Intel 8080 microprocessor and interchangeable circuit boards containing ROM chips that could be plugged into the base unit. Sound familiar? The duo attempted to gain interest from several television manufacturers in this for the system, but were unsuccessful. So if you think about it, at the time with the Magnavox Odyssey when it was out and several of those other Pong consoles and stuff, they were all licensed by TV manufacturers like Magnavox and stuff. So naturally, that's where they first started, but they ended up contacting Fairchild, and Jerry Lawson was essentially sent to evaluate the system. Now, Lawson was impressed by the system and suggested that Fairchild license the technology. So eventually, Lawson's job was to take their prototype and make it ready for market. Interestingly enough, he basically swapped the entire prototype as far as the hardware was concerned and kind of started over from scratch. He replaced the Intel processor with the Fairchild's own F8 CPU, and he led a team of engineers that needed to translate the unit from keyboard controls to a single joystick and created a numbered cartridges that would plug into the system. What's interesting about the controller, have you guys ever seen a controller for the Fairchild Channel F?
No.
It's really wonky looking.
I saw it at the Midwest Gaming Classic a couple of years ago, where they had this like history of video games and stuff, and it was there.
So it's like a piece of plastic that you hold onto, you know, it's like a tube. And then the top of it is where the controls are. And it's like a knob, right? And it's 8-way directional in the sense that it can go 4 directions, forward, backwards, left, right, and then in the corners. And then it also can pull up or press down if you want to, which was something that not a lot of companies were able to emulate later on until, you know, much further into gaming's kind of history, if you will. So it was way ahead of its time. At that time, when it comes to video game consoles, most of them were sold with the games built into the unit, which really meant that it was a one-time purchase, right? You would purchase, typically most of them were just Pong clones. So it was, you know, just one game of Pong. As time went on into the mid-70s, they started adding new games. Some of them were just a rendition of Pong that was just slightly different. So like hockey, for example, was 2 paddles on each side that you would move. There was one where the idea was to try to get the ball to pass your side. So it was the entire field of play for where your paddle was, and there was a hole in it. So you tried to get the hole into, or get the ball into the hole. There was a bunch of that stuff going on. But the thing was, once you bought that unit, that's all you had. So you couldn't play any different games. And often it was kind of considered a novelty item for the most part. So with this idea of having ROM-based cartridges that were interchangeable, all of a sudden the video game console itself became something that had a long-term viable shelf life. So it wasn't that you were looking to play something for a few weeks and then forget about it. You could always go to the store and buy another cartridge, which made it huge for Fairchild. So after working on the system for 2 years, the Fairchild Channel F was released in November of 1976, almost a full year prior to the release of the Atari VCS. Now here's a fun fact. Literally. The F in the name Channel F stood for fun. Look at that. Fun facts that are fun.
Wow.
Now, the sad part, though, is that once the Atari 2600 came to market, the Channel Off was largely forgotten, and mostly having to do with the software, which was predominantly educational, puzzle-based, and casino games compared to the action-based games that came out on Atari. So the system, though, would continue to sell until 1983, releasing 26 official cartridges, and even one more released as a homebrew cartridge in 2004, which is kind of cool. Now, Lawson would eventually leave Fairchild to create his own video game software company called VideoSoft. It was the first Black-owned video game company. Unfortunately, the company was victim to the video game crash of 1983 and eventually closed its doors. It didn't release a single game, which stinks.
Yeah.
But as I understand, you can get their games now. A lot of the prototypes that were out there have been now made into games. So if you are so inclined, you can look up VideoSoft games and see if you can find some of those ROMs. Sadly, Lawson passed away in April of 2011 due to complications from diabetes. Now, Lawson was a huge influence on the video game industry and has had a strong sense that he needed to pay it forward in his life, even spending his later years as a mentor to engineering for students at Stanford University.
I feel that Jerry Lawson doesn't give the or doesn't get the notoriety and respect that he most assuredly deserves.
Absolutely.
For what he's done and how he was able to propel video games to where we're at now.
Yes, Atari certainly came out with their console a year later. But if there was no competition, who knows what the video game industry would look like compared to Absolutely. What it is now. So his influence, I think, is often overshadowed because people think of the Atari 2600 as being the first. But at the end of the day, not only was he able to achieve great things, but also being a minority, he became a huge inspiration to a lot of people as well. So to kind of wrap things up, Lawson's influence on the industry, again, cannot be understated, but his work allowed the video game industry to be a viable long-term product that we all enjoy today. He was and continues to be an inspiration in America as well as around the world. So thank you for attending today's lesson. Just a reminder, if you have any ideas for a future story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion. So thank you for listening to this episode 39 of Gamers Week Podcast, and a big thank you to Retro Game Club Podcast, the Elitist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. If you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. Join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. Finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave us a rating and review and let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. While you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
God damn.
It's my SpongeBob laugh.
Right.
Daddy, okay?
Donnie died.
Oh, no, damn it. Oh, son of a... I started... I was doing a... what's it? SpongeBob voice.
Oh, we missed all your SpongeBob voice.
You did. I was like, oh, Squidward. I thought you guys were laughing, but you weren't. I'll just go now.
Could play the Hulk music again. good night, everybody.
Yeah, good night.
I try to say goodbye and I choke. Try to walk away and I step off.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like,
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make it fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.